Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party. Me and Dallas are still down in London covering the London Film Festival, so we'll be dropping another one of our A24 project interviews in your feed to enjoy. I recently spoke with Adam Pearson, documentarian and actor, best known for his portrayal of the disfigured man in Under the Skin. Me and Adam start our conversation by talking about this latest documentary, Eugenics, Science's Greatest Scandal, which screened last week on BBC 4 and continues this Thursday and can be found on the BBC iPlayer. Then we dive into Under the Skin, the audition process, how they created and developed the character of the disfigured man, working with Scarlett Johansson and Jonathan Glazer, and seeing the film for the first time and its impact, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy the show, and you can find more of our A24 interviews by searching for the A24 Project wherever you download your podcasts. Enjoy the show.
Can you tell us a little bit about your upcoming show? It's going to be dropping this Wednesday on BBC 4, Eugenics, Science's Greatest Scandal. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So we're looking at the whole subject of eugenics, the past, the old Nazi action teeth law camps, and myself and my co-presenter Angela Sioni are looking at it from the aspects of disability and also race. Angela does a lot of work around race and science. That's incredible. And looking at what was it and how can we avoid it happening again. And it's just a really interesting delve into what is an incredibly dark but also journalistically very rich topic. And I'm a firm believer that just because something is difficult to talk about, it doesn't mean we don't talk about it. And as journalists, I think we should be able to probe and examine anything irrespective of how it makes us or other people feel.
I think you make a great point there. It's something that's so rich, but when I sort of first heard about the show, I was thinking, like, surely that's been touched on sort of before, or maybe there's sort of documentaries that complement this. And all I could think of was the craze that the British media had sort of in the early 2000s with designer babies, and that's how they sort of always sort of discussed eugenics to an extent. How important is it for the British public to understand that there's more to it than that, and understanding its historical context?
I think it's incredibly important to both understand the history, because, and it sounds completely cliche, but if you don't learn from the mistakes of the past, you're destined to repeat them. And I think we only see things in headlines nowadays. You kind of read a thread or a subthread, and that's then your opinion. And people don't access the meat and bones of things very often. So to bring this to people and kind of bridge the gap between society and science is an incredibly helpful thing. And the term designer babies does come up in the second episode. We look at things like kind of CRISPR and gene editing and ask the question, is this just the same beast? Is this just eugenics, but under a different name with like a scientific coat of paint over the top of it?
What did you sort of learn from this experience, and what's your involvement in the show?
So I'm one of the presenters. I've done a lot of work around disability activism and equality in the past. And so I'm really au fait with the, with the disability landscape of the generation I grew up in. And so to go back and look at what happened in the past was somewhat shocking and somewhat jarring. And whilst I think being a disabled person in 2019 is far from easy, and I don't want to kind of justify inequalities that exist today, but the thinking that occurred back then was completely backwards.
With that, what do you hope when people watch this show, if this isn't maybe their first time sort of learning about eugenics and its history, what do you hope kind of people can take away from it for how to perhaps think and treat others?
Well, I think with any documentary, there are good documentaries and there are great documentaries, and good documentaries will change what you think, and great documentaries will change how you think. And it's never the aim to kind of get up on a pedestal and shout your opinion longer and louder and drown out any other voice. I think it's always engage with the issue and engage with the audience and kind of bring them in into the conversation and make the subject as accessible as possible. And when it comes to things like CRISPR and gene editing and bioethics, these are really high-end sciences. So to bring it to a place where everyone can be involved in the conversation is the aim. I want to get people talking and discussing it and let them make their own minds up. We don't want to make documentaries that hold people's hands and lead them to the conclusion that eugenics wasn't the best idea on earth. Because A, that's blindly obvious. And also it's just a little bit narrow-minded, and it isn't really, I use this word very deliberately, it's not helpful for documentaries to do that. Like, people should be allowed to think what they want and draw their own conclusions, not only if they've been armed with the proper information.
Do you feel a documentary like this comes at perhaps a good time where science is moving faster than ever, and sometimes but before we can even debate the morals of something, some science has moved beyond that and it's being used? Do you feel something like this comes at a good time where it maybe gets people to stop, pause and think about how they apply science and where they go next with it?
Completely. And there's a whole wing of science called bioethics whose sole job is to do that. There's a wing of science that goes, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And I'm so glad it's there, because that ultimately is the safeguarding to stop, or to at least attempt to stop, like the crazier stuff, the sci-fi stuff, from happening. That's not to say kind of bad apples don't spoil the batch and slip through the cracks, like the case in China, where a doctor went rogue and made kind of HIV-resistant babies and forged loads of documents and broke loads of laws, etc., and is no longer under house arrest. And so that's there. And I think just to start having the conversation is good. And as you say, science moves so quickly. Look at the disparity between where the science is and what the actual legislation is that governs it. They're poles apart, so anything that can spark a debate and maybe bring the legislation at least up to speed with science can only be a good thing.
Do you see yourself, once this show's come out there and, as you say, a debate can happen, discussions, people can come to it, what kind of role do you see yourself playing after the show in sort of maybe facilitating and meeting that debate? Or is it just a case of you make this work and you sit back and let the other people kind of discuss it, argue it out? What do you see your role in as next?
Well, once this goes out, of course, we'll see what the reaction is. And I'll happily be a conduit or a facilitator to further this conversation and to further the agenda and to kind of bring the debate to those who want to hear it and those who want to engage with it. Someone who academically isn't a scientist and had to learn over the course of several documentaries, had to learn a lot of stuff very quickly. I know what it's like to be completely confused by all of this. So to be able to, I can sympathise with people who just see these kind of things and think, I've got nothing. So to be able to kind of bring them in and bring people up to speed and help them understand the science world around them is something I'd be very keen to do. And also just to be almost like a voice to the voiceless. There are loads of people out there with different genetic conditions and disabilities and conditions who feel very targeted and isolated by the medical model of disability that puts things into a kind of problem solution mentality. So to be able to bring them in and say, kind of, here is a room full of geneticists, what are your concerns, would also be something I'm keen to do, to kind of increase the level of kind of patient doctor or client doctor engagement would be an ideal result of this.
And obviously the show will be out on, I think it's, was it October 2nd, is it?
No, on BBC... third and 10th.
That's excellent. And that's on BBC Four, yeah.
It is.
Excellent. We'll be obviously put a link to that into the show notes so people can find it when this drops. Obviously, you're not just a talented TV presenter and documentarian. You're obviously a well-known actor as well for your performance as the disfigured man in Under the Skin. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came around?
Yeah, I only really applied to my name in the ring. It's not like a bit of a joke. I didn't really think anything would happen because I know the nature of acting, and as someone who worked in casting for Channel 4 shows, I know the massive volume of people that apply for these things. But then I got really serious really quickly, and then I'm talking to the casting director Carlene on the phone, and then I have to upload a clip of myself to YouTube for the director Jonathan Glazer, and that was the only concrete bit of information I knew at the time, was that it was being directed by Jonathan Glazer. And as a business graduate, I've written papers on his work in advertising, and I've just churned out this 5,000-word essay as to why there will be no better adverts made than his Guinness adverts. And so I was like, okay, at least I get to work with a legend. And then on the way to the final meeting with Jonathan, I got hit by a car on Tottenham Court Road and broke my leg. So the first time I met the director, I was under a taxi in my pants, surrounded by paramedics.
Oh my.
I used giraffe tail and morphine, and apparently made a crash joke about not having a stunt double, and got the job.
Was there any sort of concern when you heard that they were looking for someone like yourself, where they were like, we know what Hollywood and cinemas can be like, and I think you've touched on this in the past, that they can often take people with scarring or physical disabilities, facial mm-hmm. things, and it's, they're the villain, they're the Bond bad guy with the scar, etc. Did you have any sort of concern that that could be this, or were you sort of more hopeful of the fact that someone like Jonathan Glazer is involved, surely it's going to be better than that?
Yeah, I think knowing the director and that body of work in both the advertising realm and also with things like Birth and Sexy Beast also within the belt, I had slightly higher hopes than that. And also, I even if it was that kind of trope, they're going to do it anyway. And I'd rather someone with an actual disfigurement or an actual scar be involved than only just take someone and slap a load of prosthetics on them and completely miss the mark, as opposed to mildly missing the mark.
You obviously touched on sort of this audition process. When you sort of met Jonathan, what was the sort of next stage from that meeting to heading up to Glasgow, here in my home city of Scotland, to kind of being in this film? What was that kind of in-between stage like?
We met a couple of times, myself, Jonathan and Scott, and kind of discussed the character and, you know, what would make him get into a van with someone who he didn't know. Because they just asked, would you get into a van with someone if they offered you a lift? And I was like, no, that's how children go missing. What are you talking about? And so we kind of worked on that and tried to kind of break it all down and kind of give the character a bit more life and a bit more brevity and a bit more breath, so to speak. And because I hadn't acted before outside of a kind of couple of crappy school plays. And you know, in a way, presenting a sort of entertainment for yourself with the volume turned up a little bit, but this was a million miles away from what I've done before. And when you're working for Jonathan Glazer with Scarlett Johansson as like your first gig, A, what's your second gig? And B, just the pressure was crazy.
You obviously touched on the developing of this character of the disfigured man, as he's kind of known in the credits, he doesn't get given a name. With that, what is an exciting kind of thing to be able to sort of craft this character and help build the dialogue, as opposed to, okay, Adam, here, come on to set, we need you to read these lines, see you kind of later. How exciting is that as a first-time actor, or as even someone like yourself, to be able to create a role and draw from your own experiences in life to create this unforgettable character?
I think those are the the good roles, I was very fortunate that that was my kind of entry point. Because a lot of the dialogue in Under Skin is really loose. It wasn't... The stuff in the van isn't heavily scripted at all. We've both got earpieces in, and Jonathan's in the back of the van, kind of talking to us both. So we had bullet points that we had to hit, obviously. There was structure, but it wasn't as rigid as other heavily scripted films would be. So we had to kind of have that almost freedom to give the character room to move and to bounce off and act. Chris is as well-versed and talented as Scarlett Johansson was incredible.
Do you get much, do you sort of go through that scene a couple times together, or is it a case of, you know, we're going to try and hit on these points and just let it kind of naturally come? How do you sort of prepare for those scenes?
So once we had the structure down, we just drove around all night and just ran it through four or five times just to see what felt good, what didn't feel good, what would make the final cut, what wouldn't make the final cut. And so that was my first shooting in Glasgow, was a night shoot in a van with Scarlett Johansson.
It's certainly an emotional scene to watch. What was it like to shoot as the, you know, I think you feel that emotion of the touching of the hands and the face, and I love that line of, you know, these are, you know, I love your hands. It's, and I think I'd heard that that was something that your mother used to say to you, if that's correct.
Yeah. My mother says, you have beautiful hands, Adam. You have hands like my brother. And just random people even say I've got kind of nice hands. So it's something that I thought kind of would keep the scene grounded and give it that element of kind of reality. And I think when you can not necessarily retell your own experiences as an actor, but draw from them. Everyone has some kind of inner darkness or inner expression that they tap into when they do any role. And those are roles that really stand out and jump off the screen in the end product.
It's such a pivotal role as well. I mean, it's 10 minutes or so that you're in the film, but your impact on that film is huge. You know, we begin to see this more human and empathetic side to the alien character played by Scarlett Johansson. Did you feel that pressure to deliver a performance that could help convincingly make that transformation in her character? What was that kind of like to deal with?
I think you, as an actor, you turn up and you do your job, and you try and put all of that kind of stuff, you kind of park it to the side. You're aware of it, but you don't really let that overwhelm you, because then you almost overcompensate and you start to overact, and it all becomes a little bit pantomime and a bit abdram. So you just kind of get into the headspace of that moment and do your thing.
One of the parts for that I think is fascinating is when you've got into this van, even though Adam wouldn't do it, you've done it in this film, and it's the second scene where, you know, you're taken into this dark room, and it's such a mysterious thing in the film, and I always think, I wonder what it was like to shoot in that room. What was it like for that second scene?
I love that scene, just from a technical point of view. Like, it's just such a spectacle to behold how they set everything up and the way it's all done, and it's just all really clever lighting and like very well thought through camera work. And yeah, that black void stuff takes ages to get off.
And what was that black stuff? I've always been kind of curious about it.
Yeah, it's almost like molasses. So it's a black marble floor.
Interesting.
With like a tank of black molasses in one corner. And there's sort of like a hydraulic grate just underneath the surface, and all the guys walk forward, and the grate slowly lowers down, and so you go right under, ultimately.
That's amazing, and I want to go back just a little bit to sort of just the van one last time. How have people reacted to that scene? I know what it was like for myself watching that in the cinema, like opening weekend, and just being so touched by it, and you know, I always can imagine there's a lot of people will maybe come to it in different ways. People will watch it in fear for you, worrying that this is a person that is no doubt going to their doom. people will come at it of going, oh, who's this actor? And wondering, is that someone under makeup, for example? How have you kind of found people have reacted to that scene when they've watched it for the first time?
Yeah, like you say, people are just like, oh, this one's definitely a goner. Or kind of, is that makeup? Or kind of, they either start to empathise as well with anyone in that film. There's always the question, do they know what's going on here? Or are they just a random that got in the van off the lovely streets of Glasgow? And so once we start to kind of slowly unpack that, they eventually come to it from wherever they want to come to it, which is one of the beautiful things about Under the Skin, is it doesn't hold the audience's hand. The film just starts and you get on with it.
When did you sort of see the film for the first time, and what was that experience like?
First time I saw it was when it premiered in London. And I thought it'd just be like a little shindig at like the Prince Charles or somewhere, and then they sold out the Odeon in Leicester Square, and I invited my best friend Roxy for vocal support, and then it was just crazy, just like the atmosphere in the room was just so tense, and I think that's a mixture of like the amazing camera work, brilliant kind of direction, and that soundtrack is
oh,
just
that soundtrack
terrifying. Rika Levy's soundtrack is just a spectacle to behold. It amazes you and haunts you in equal measure.
And the thing is, like, we've touched on it a little bit earlier, that it's important for people like yourselves to be cast in these roles. If a character has a disability and health condition, it should always be, can we find someone that has that to cast that role? Do you feel that you've become almost like an advocate for that sort of thing, that we see a lot of debate and discussions had recently where it's like, actors can play any role, or some people are like, no, actually, we need to think about the diversity here. We can't just have a limited pool playing it. Do you feel films like Under the Skin have helped to become part of the conversation and showcase amazing talent like yourself?
I think they have, and I think it's a very important debate to be having. Outside of the... Because there are two poles where there's some argument. There's the anyone can play anything, and then there's the only disabled people can play disabled roles. And I think the actual reality lies somewhere in the middle. Because there are loads of things to be considered, like what the role kind of requires, but also the equal classicalness of anyone can play anything. That is limited, but not is includes, but not is limited to kind of blacking up. Which in 1965, when Olivier won an Oscar for Othello, was probably completely fine. I think if Adam Sandler had done it before he was a slave, we'd have all been a lot less fine with it. And so I think we need to look at how we cast, who we cast, and almost lower the drawbridge and let disabled actors get in the room to audition and let their talent do the talking.
One of the things that we've been doing this show for nearly a year now, and we ask all our guests, all the talent that we've had on from directors and actors to tell us what some of their favourite A24 films are. And Under the Skin always comes in at least people's top three or number one. It's currently my favourite one, and the same with my co-host, Alice. How does it feel to have one of the most popular films within the A24 filmography, and for you to be one of the most important characters within it? And what's that like for you to be part of Under the Skin?
It's bizarre. I didn't think for a second it would be anywhere near as big as it's become. Like, it just made The Guardian's top 100 films of the 21st century at like number four. And because I'm naturally quite competitive, I looked at what would come third, second, and first, and thought, okay, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with losing to There Will Be Blood, because There Will Be Blood's incredible.
Oh, definitely.
So to be part of it has been incredible. People still talk about it now. And it's one of those songs that, you know, when it came to like the mainstream awards at the BAFTAs, I think we lost out to This Theory of Everything for Best British Film. But that's something that no one talks about anymore. whereas Under the Skin is still being studied and is widely regarded as a masterpiece.
Absolutely. And what's, we talk about the film's impact there, you know, 6-7 years on. What would you say the impact's been for you from this guy from Croydon going to Glasgow, doing this part in a film? What's been its impact for you?
It's given me something else to do and to talk about. And I have this chat with Jonathan a lot. Before that, I was just the guy with the weird face that rocked up on TV every now and again. Whereas now it's just opened all these doors as like an advocate for other disabled actors, an actor very much within my own right. And it's just given me an opportunity to kind of practice what I preach and demonstrate what I've been saying for years now, that disabled people have value. And that, you know, tell us what to do, we'll do that. Our acting talents and prowess and on par with our non-disabled counterparts, and let talent do the talking.
Do you feel that, like, obviously you've done work with BBC and Channel 4, do you think when things like Under the Skin come along and other things, they've maybe realised that they've maybe come up short in representation and they've maybe tried to rectify that and to kind of do better? Do you feel that's been the case sort of in this sort of past 5-10 years for television, that maybe they've come up short in terms of disability representation?
I think they're trying, but they're still nowhere near where they need to be. When we talk about disability, we're talking about 20% of the UK population. And the BBC has an on-screen target of 8% by 2020, which is still a 12% shortfall if you're looking to represent the licensing public, which is part of the BBC's mandate. And not only is the representation not there, I think the language they use around it and the actual the way they portray disability can also sometimes be way off. And it falls into either the victim or the villain. And it's ones that with like a, you know, someone in a wheelchair telling their story, or they play Coldplay fiction, or something equally pretentious in the background, to kind of almost garner sympathy. And it's kind of this weird disability porn, where you're using someone else's aesthetic to gratify your own emotions. You can go, oh, aren't they brave? Now I feel better about myself. And that's not how disability works. It's also a very one-dimensional view of disability.
And how does it felt? You know, you're obviously an incredible advocate. You know, how do you sort of, is it burning you every day to kind of continue to be that advocate? Or do you ever wish those times to be able to just be able to go, you know, share that mantle, for example? Is it a challenge to be out there as an advocate, putting yourself out there and championing something?
I don't think it's ever a challenge to champion something. I think if you're passionate about something, you fervently believe something, the companion element comes really easy. And that's what all this is a result of. To be kind of famous and a well-respected actor, presenter, etc., was never really in my thought process. It was always on campaigning and making the world a better place for people with disabilities or people like myself, to enable someone with a disability or a disfigurement to go into a pub or go into a shop and it not be an issue. And all this presenting and acting and public speaking, etc., has all been a really fortunate byproduct of being very good at that.
That's amazing. And you've obviously touched on, you've got this upcoming show, you've done so much recently. What other things can we look out for in the coming future that we should all keep an eye out for?
I have another movie.
Oh, amazing.
We've already done, like, a year doing the festival circuits and, you know, New York. We got Best Picture at Method Fest in Los Angeles. We're running in Istanbul at the moment. We did Perth a couple of months ago and did very well there, but we're getting a theatrical release in London and other major cities in the UK. watch this space.
Excellent.
October 25th at the ICA.
Excellent. And can you tell us a little bit about the film?
So it's called Chains Belong, directed by Aaron Schoenberg, a New York-based director. And it's a sort of film within a film. It's sort of like a satirical comedy horror that looks at the portrayal of disability throughout the history of cinema.
That sounds right up my street. I'm really looking forward to that. And if people wanted to kind of find, you know, keep up to date with news, shows, what's the sort of best social media things to keep an eye on for Adam?
The old Twitter is always good, Adam_Pearson. I do the Facebook and the Instagram as well. I'm across everything.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on to talk with me today, Adam. I'm really looking forward to your new show, and it's great to be able to talk with one of the stars of Under the Skin, truly one of the best films of the past decade. And your role in it makes it as such a special film. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.